Tonight on Arena, ex-waterboy Joe Chesser on his new solo album, and Esther Saffron 4 reworks her son Jonathan's fiction to find the facts of her life. Five one double 51551 is the text. You can tweet the programme at RTE Arena. We start this evening with John O'Donnell, the award-winning poet and barrister who has just published his debut short story collection. Almost the Same Blue brings together 15 tales of people in extremis. Tales of deceit, love and death unfolding in backdrops as diverse as post-crash Ireland, the south of France and Renaissance Rome. John O'Donnell joins me now. John, we know you primarily as a poet. Your latest poetry collection, Sunlight, New and Selected Poems, published by Daedalus in 2018. Have the stories been going on in camera, to use the legal term?
Very good, John. Very good.
During all this time.
Well, I hadn't written stories since I was in school. But in 2008, somebody came up to me in the Law Library and said, we're putting together an anthology of short stories and we'd like you to contribute one. Oh, and by the way, in case you're thinking of getting out of it, it's for charity. So I was stuck. And not having written a story for 30 years, I was left trying to find out how I might go about writing one. But in the course of the summer, I read an article in the newspaper about a rugby player who had been crippled playing a game. And I thought about that story because I'd played the game myself when I was younger. I thought about that and what that must be like. And then I wrote the story. The first story that I ever wrote was the story called Promise, which is in the book, about a crippled rugby player who persuades his best friend to take him to Switzerland.
So it was that sort of spur from a colleague that sent you off to do that. And in writing about the rugby situation there, because it's something I wanted to ask you about a couple of the stories in the book, you did take a real life situation, but how quickly did it become fictionalized? How unrecognizable did it become to you when it started to morph into a story?
Oh, I don't think it's recognizable. These have resonances with some kind of cases that people will be familiar with, but they're totally fictional, completely fictional. So I don't think that there's any. I mean, I'm obviously careful of the laws of defamation, but I don't think there's any resemblance to people who are living or dead. There's one story which is based on a story called Ostrich, which is based on the King's Mill atrocity in the north in the 70s. The people who were shot, the linen workers who were shot in the minibus, and that's would be recognisably based on that. But again, it's a fictional character.
Yes, I had wondered specifically about that one because it was so immediately recognisable.
Yes,
a group of workmen coming home, work colleagues coming home in a minibus. They're singled out. The gunman asks, "Which of you is the Catholic?"
Exactly.
And
tells
the Catholic to run off, and then proceeds to
gun down the rest.
Gun down everybody else. When you were taking something as sensitive as that King's Mill story and fictionalising it, what kind of considerations did you have to have?
Well, I was conscious that obviously the families of the people were still alive, so you have to be respectful of it. But at the same time, while I wanted to get the factual texture, the background texture correct, I didn't feel that I couldn't make up a story about it, provided it was respectful. And the character in it is fictional, but he clearly is somebody who could have been in that minibus at that time.
Was there something specific about that event in Northern Ireland? There were so many horrific events, not dissimilar to King's Mill, with, you can switch from Protestant to Catholic to tell whatever story it is you want to tell. But the outcome was often the same. A young man or a young person, often innocent victim, lying dead on the side of the road. Was there something about the King's Mill story that particularly caught your attention?
I think the awfulness, the drama of the men being lined up outside the minibus and being asked which one is the Catholic, and I think Seamus Heaney remembers this in his Nobel Prize speech, that when the Catholic goes to answer, his friend says don't say anything and hold his arm. And I think that when that transformation, that it turns out that it's not the Catholic they're going to shoot, but it's the others. I think that's an awful moment, and I was very struck by the horror of that.
I'm not surprised that you say there is no resemblance to anybody living or dead in many of the stories, particularly a story called Partners, which of course describes the legal profession. Maybe you'd give us a sense of the lead character here, or your protagonist, Roland. Are all lawyers like this?
Well, he's a solicitor. He's not a
solicitor. I beg your pardon.
But now, it's funny you say, because somebody told me that story at a party. You'll see that he...
Stop. Somebody told me that story at a party.
But it's a story about a somewhat bumptious lawyer who doesn't realise what his wife is getting up to until his feet start to hurt. And then the explanation is, you find out at the end what happens. But, that's based on a story that was told to be at a party, but whether it's true or not, who knows?
Yeah, well, what I'm more interested in, yes, there's a touch of what's the difference between a size 9 shoe and a size 9.5 shoe. That's vital to this story, of course. And if you're wearing the one that's too small, you'll know immediately what the difference between the two is. But what we really get at here is the inner machinations of a law firm. Again, I'm sure no resemblance to any law firm.
Absolutely not, Sean. I can't imagine solicitors scheming to become partners or looking to oust people who might be a threat to their on the ladder to success. How could that possibly happen?
Yeah, and Sweeney Fletcher Anderson and Co. I don't recognise that name from any golden pages.
Yes, I think they're named they're referred to as Sweet FA in the course of the story. Yeah,
yeah, you enjoyed that, but I think you possibly enjoyed even more. Roland's wife Nikki is an actor, and things have been drying up for her in recent times, but she's about to be involved in a new play called Eurobola. Now, maybe you explain what that play is about. And when did you come up with that title? Surely not in recent times.
No, that story was written, I'd say, 6 or 7 years ago. It was published in The Gloss. Eurobola is a play that her kind of trendy, slightly hopeless appearing boyfriend has written, which is about a virus that is passed by handling money.
and again, like so many people I have spoken to in recent times, it is extraordinary how something written whatever amount of time ago suddenly has a relevance today that you certainly didn't expect.
You were talking to Scott Turow yesterday about testing for vaccines and so on. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, it comes up night after night. How different is the experience, John, of writing a poem from writing a short story? I can't imagine that we're into marathon land here, but are we talking kind of about the difference between a sprint and maybe a middle distance run?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, you could take a long time to write a short poem, but it takes me much, much longer to write a short story. And they come from a different place. Maybe I'm slightly weird about this, but I use a different pen, I use different notepad. They feel like they come from a different place, and I kind of know if it's going to be a story or if it's going to be a poem. I know pretty much straight away.
Mm. You're not going to tell me you're ambidextrous as well.
No, I'm not. I have enough trouble trying to write with one hand. but it does feel like it comes from a different location, yeah.
There is one story in the book there's a touch of Tales of the Unexpected about some of the stories, but there was one story in the book that certainly, and I want to be careful about not giving too much away, it's the second story in the book, in fact, a story called Shelley. And if I say that it we realise as it goes on that we're dealing with a sexual assault here, two very young people involved.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not sure legally even if sexual assault is the right word to be used for what you describe in the story.
Well, it is, but a colleague told me about this, told me that a young boy had been charged with assaulting a young girl, like a very young girl, and I couldn't believe it, and I was wondering how it would happen, and then started to imagine how it would happen, and then how would the court system cope with it? As you know, a number of young or relatively young boys, teens, have been charged with various horrific offences in the last couple of years, but this again was based on a story that somebody had told me, and I was trying to work out how people would the legal system would cope with it, how the social system would cope with it, and so on.
You don't speak in poetry, I'm sure, when you're in court. But there must be an element of prose writing that is something similar to the way you might, you know, take a brief and work it into a kind of dramatic monologue, which is partly what you're doing when you're in court, I guess.
Well, I mean, there's, I suppose there are three ways in which the kind of the legal kind of life intersects. I mean, the first, I suppose, is that you're always looking for the exactly correct word. I'm not saying you always find it, but that's, you're looking for the word, the nuanced word and the exact correct word. That's the first way. The second thing, though, is that as an advocate, as somebody presenting a case in court, you're telling your client's story, and you've got to make it as attractive as you can to the judge or to the jury, whoever's listening. So you've got to engage them and to make it interesting and make it real for them. And that's, I suppose, part of the training that you gain over the years. And that's, I suppose, one of the things that I'm doing as a writer, is trying to engage people to listen, to hopefully get them to listen. But then the third thing, the third way in which the kind of lives intersect, is, of course, that the material that you learn, the information that you learn engaging with clients and with people down in the courts, is amazing. I mean, if you think of what Stephen King said that the only requirement of a writer is the ability to remember the story of every scar. Well, I mean, you think of the number of people who have physical, psychic scars, corporate scars, and you learn so much about so many people. That's, I suppose, a very rich primary source of what people will do to each other.
That suggests to me that the 15 stories that we get in this debut short story collection, Almost the Same Blue, from you, John O'Donnell, there may be other stories sitting in a briefcase somewhere or other.
You may very well think that. Couldn't possibly comment.
Don't give me the barrister's
answer. Obviously, I can't. It's not ethical to write a story based closely on the facts of a case in which I was involved. That wouldn't be permissible. But there are clearly stories that, you know, I've come across situations or incidents where you could, they have been reflected in the stories I've written.
For an awful moment there, I thought you were going to tell me it wouldn't be ethical to tell me what your next book was going to be.
No.
Well, listen, congratulations on the stories. And stories or poems next? What will it be, or do you know yet, John?
I don't know. I'm ploughing through a collection of both of each. So I don't know which one makes it to the finish line.
Whichever makes it to the surface first. That's John O'Donnell speaking to us about his debut collection of short stories, Almost the Same Blue, which is published by Dura Press.